appreciate that. So next you have a status report on all the activities having to do with PG&E in Hinckley. And we have a staff presentation. Take it away.
Good evening, Dr. Horn and board members. My name is Lisa Dernbach, and I'll be presenting agenda item number 9, which is the status report for activities concerning chromium contamination for the PG&E Hinckley compressor station. Normally, when we bring these status reports to you, we describe the ongoing status and progress for chromium plume delineation, for the cleanup activities, and the domestic well sampling program. And this one, because we just recently gave you that status update in September, I thought it might be more interesting for you and the public as well to find out where are we on the status of chromium mass removal for this project. So that's how I'm going to start out.
Not working.
Can someone run the book? Thank you. So first off in my presentation, I'm going to talk about the semi-annual remediation status reports that we receive. And I'll bring you up to date on the chromium mass that's been remediated to date that's been reported. And then following that, I'll provide a summary of the third quarter 2014 chromium plume and the monitoring data that was submitted to us just a couple weeks ago. I'll also provide a summary of the future remedial actions that PG&E is proposing. And then I'll provide you up to date on the contract status. We've mentioned several times tonight the USGS chromium background study. And then finally, I'll provide board staff's plan next actions. Next, please. So cleanup and abatement order, R6V 2008, number 2, requires PG&E to submit semi-annual status reports on the progress to remediate chromium. And the requirement is pretty specific. PG&E must describe the remedial actions that have been implemented and are planned, report any violations, discuss also the effectiveness of the remedial actions, and then to provide recommendations to increase effectiveness if not achieving the expected chromium reductions. Next. So this is a timeline for the key remedial actions that have been implemented for the project since 1992 to current 2014. And the first two cleanup actions that were implemented was two agricultural fields called the East Land Treatment Unit and the Ranch Land Treatment Unit. And they both operated until 2001. Next slide. And PG&E has reported that this is the mass of chromium-6 that was remediated in those two fields. It was 850 pounds hexavalent chromium in the East Land Treatment Unit and 40 pounds chromium-6 removed in the Ranch Land Treatment Unit. And the difference or the discrepancy between those two numbers has to do with the proximity to the source area. The East Field was located across the street from the compressor station, so the chromium concentration was much higher in the groundwater that was removed for that field compared to the ranch field located a mile and a half down gradient, which had like an order of magnitude less than chromium concentration. The next graph we're going to see will represent the remedial actions that have been implemented for the last 10 years, starting in 2004. And they started with the startup of the Desert View Dairy Agricultural Treatment Unit, which has been operating for 10 years. And then what you'll see in the next graph is that in 2011, five more fields were added over the last 3 years, and we'll see how that kind of changed the chromium removal that occurred since then. Next. So this graph is cumulative pounds of hexavalent chromium removed versus cumulative ATU gallons extracted from 2004 to 2014. And at the beginning, in 2004, it was just the Desert Butte Dairy field that was operating. And I drew in the slope line to show that if that field was the only one that had remained operating, it was on a slope to remove 185 pounds chromium 6 in that 10 years of operating. 2011, to provide for further chromium plume containment, PG&E started operating 5 more agricultural units, and what that had the impact was doubling the slope line, and by 2014 we got to 375 pounds removed rather than if this had just been this one field in operation. So it really doubled the mass of chromium removed, and it was really significant in just the last 3 years. So next slide. So we had that 375 pounds removed over the last 10 years. And again, once again, we see it still doesn't compare to the 850 pounds removed from the Eastland treatment unit. And I just want to point out at this time that except for the East field, all the other land treatment units were added for the sole purpose of plume containment and to prevent further migration down gradient. So that includes the ranch field, the Desert View Dairy, and then all these subsequent 5 fields. It was just for plume containment. So we weren't expecting large amounts of chromium removal in those latter fields. Let's see how it changed the plume anyway. Next one. So over the last 10 years, from 2004 up to 2014, we see changes in the chromium plume represented by the 50 parts per billion line and the 10 parts per billion line. And in 2004, this was the Desert View Dairy was the only field operating. And between that and the next 6 years to 2010, more monitoring wells were installed and we got better plume definition. But a really difference you see from the 2004 plume is that the 50 parts per billion line actually got fatter. And we attribute that to just better plume definition at that time. So PG&E, after 2010, started up more fields, and you can see all those additional orange dots, they represent the additional extraction wells that were added in. And what that had the effect on the plume was the northern plume line came down slightly. The western plume boundary and the eastern plume boundary kind of constricted on each other. But I think the biggest difference you see is the 50 parts per billion plume line in 2014 compared to what it was just 4 years ago. So to us, this is a good positive to take away that we're seeing some reduction in the chromium plume over time. And next. So how much chromium 6 has been removed to date from the agricultural treatment units? We add up the chromium 6 removed for each of the fields, and they total 1,265 pounds chromium 6 removed over all the years of operation going back to 1992. Next. And how does this compare to the total mass of chromium 6 that was originally released at the compressor station? The original mass has been calculated at 4,700 pounds. And so we subtract the number from all the ag fields that have been removed, the 1,265-pound number. And that gives us a difference of 3,435 pounds, or 73% of the original mass. I just want to qualify that this is just the agricultural fields. It doesn't take into consideration the remediation that's been done in the in situ remediation. We haven't been told what that number is. Only about 50-something acres have been addressed by the in situ area. So we're looking forward to that number sometime in the future from PG&E to tell us how much more chromium mass removal from the IRZ can maybe we put in to this calculation you see here. Next slide. All right, so going back to provide a summary of the chromium plume. Just a couple weeks ago, we got the third quarter monitoring report as well as the plume map. And this map here represents the second quarter 2014 plume map. And go click once. And the only difference, the major differences we saw in the third quarter plume map is this northern area we staff affectionately calls the bunny. These look like bunny ears here with a nose, kind of like profile view. Well, the change, click again, is that the northwest bunny ear is no longer being detected above 3.1, so that has gone. And then this line connecting the one bunny ear remaining to the bodies has been drawn. One other change is that over here in the west, we saw for many quarters chromium detection above background in the Mulberry Road area and Flower Street. And for the first time, that's not being detected above background anymore. So that has gone away. Next slide. So those are the items I just described. The bunny ear going away below 3.1 and that plumelet going away. That's what we call those areas not attached to the contiguous plume. The highest chromium 6 detection is still in the source area at the compressor station, now being detected at 3,900 parts per billion, which is down from 7,200 parts per billion from second quarter. For the domestic wells, PG&E sampled 128 domestic wells in third quarter. And just to give you a comparison, a year ago they were sampling 194 domestic wells. So the domestic well sampling program has really significantly dropped in, over the years as people have moved away. The reports state that there are still 10 domestic wells where chromium is being detected above the background concentrations of 3.1 chromium 6 and 3.2 total chromium. And this is above the 9 wells in second quarter. Could you go back 2 slides, please? Oh, yeah, let's stay there. And just to give you an idea, those wells, domestic wells, where the chromium is still being detected above background, this detached chromium plume here, they're being detected in that area, 4 wells. Up here, 3 wells. And then down here by Hinkley Road, another 3 domestic wells. So they are kind of scattered all over, not a very... obvious pattern that you can detect. Okay, let's go back, go down 1, 2. Now the next slide. So the planned activities for the remainder of this year and to 2015, PG&E plans to complete and operate the agricultural treatment units, which are shown in the dark green areas. On a positive note, because 2 of these fields are planned for across the street from the compressor station, we have high expectations that we're going to get real good chromium removal in those fields, just as we did in the past from the Eastland treatment unit. PG&E plans to continue their in situ remediation area improvements, such as install new ethanol injection wells, and do a little more ethanol expansion in the source area, all within their current permit requirements. So no new permitting is required for that expansion. Click once. And again. The red area shows where chromium has been detected over a number of years in the lower aquifer. And to try and accelerate the chromium cleanup in that area, PG&E hopes plans to install a new extraction well. So we're providing comments on that proposal. And then the last item is the supplemental environmental project. PG&E is planning to finish the upgrades and then test the school water system improvements that have been made and then eventually hand it over to the Barstow Unified School District either at the end of this year or early 2015. Next slide. So, to bring you up to date on the contract status for the USGS Chromium Background Study, the USGS reviewed the contract and have signed it and then forwarded it to the Department of General Services, where it currently sits under review and waiting their signatures. So, next one. We're hoping to get all the signatures phase completed fall of this year. That's our hope, so that Dr. Zwicky can start working on what he needs to do soon after. As discussed in last agenda item number 8, board staff will start working on a draft cleanup and abatement order that we hope to distribute for public comment in early 2015. The last item refers to the general waste discharge requirements that the board adopted in 2008 for the in-situ remediation area. And we've told you the last few status reports. We've been reviewing it to see if we need to do anything more. And we finally came to the decision, yes, we think it's best to update the notice of applicabilities that have been issued under that general permit and combine all the IRZ actions under one notice of applicability. And we will send that out for a 30-day public comment period in 2015, but do not plan to bring that item before the board. So just to let you know that that's in our plans, but you won't be seeing anything more on that unless, of course, you do it during the public comment period. So that's all I have for now. Next slide. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions, Mr. Jardine? No. Mr. Humphrey?
No.
Mr. Dias?
Yes, please. Lisa, on item slide 12, you indicated that the concentration of chromium-6 in the source area has been reduced from 7,200 parts per billion to 3,900 parts per billion?
Yes, and actually it's been jumping up and down like that for about a year and a half now, going up and down and up and down.
Oh, it's not steadily decreasing.
No, in fact, what we think it's related to is the clogged ethanol injection wells that were purposely positioned to try and get that hot spot down to lower concentrations. So when we see that decrease, we're thinking that it's getting the good doses of ethanol, and then other times there's problems getting that ethanol right to that location.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sandell?
What's a notice of applicability?
That is an order signed by the executive officer that allows a discharger to operate under general waste discharge requirements.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And earlier there was a question, Lisa, I'm sorry. There was a question about uranium concentrations and arsenic. In these areas, do you have that data? I know PG&E said they didn't have it.
Where? Yes, and the money monitoring reports we make PG&E submit to the water board for the in-situ remediation area, I would say over the last year or so, arsenic has been detected at about 45 parts per billion compared to the 10 parts per billion MCL, but it remains strictly within the IRZ boundaries. We do not see it detected in any monitoring well towards the boundaries. It's always right where the ethanol is being injected. For uranium, that is a constituent being required for monitoring under the agricultural treatment unit permit. And the last monitoring report we received from PG&E shows it's been detected as high as 150 picocuries per liter, and the drinking water standard is 20 picocuries per liter. We do not believe that the uranium is being created from PG&E's cleanup actions, but it's part of the natural constituents that they're required to monitor for the project.
What about the arsenic? That seems coincidental.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, the arsenic is indeed being created in the in-situ area by PG&E's remediation, and their monitoring shows that it stays within their boundaries.
I have no questions. Thank you. That was a good presentation. Jenny, did you have...
Good evening, Kevin Sullivan, PG&E again. Very brief update, and in fact, it'll complement some of the materials that Ms. Dernbach presented. I just want to talk a little bit about the ag construction that's underway, the IRZ investigation and construction. As she said, the SEP, the Supplemental Environmental Project, is on track to wrap up in the very near future. Also to let you know that we've completed the whole house water program as of October 31st, and then we did the follow-up to the questions. This will be a very brief briefing. Can you go to the next slide? So just to let you know kind of current status, if you drive out to the site, we talked about the ranch expansion. That construction is complete. We're actually applying water out there. So this is the agricultural pivot that was around. We've expanded that, made it a little bit bigger, put in special agricultural equipment that will square off some of the corners. And so we're getting increased water flow there, which is good because that's some of the capacity that indirectly is helping us address the lower aquifer as well as back up to prevent any migration to the west. So we're glad to have that in place. Construction, if you drive out there, is kind of hot and heavy right now in the east community AU. You'll remember that this schedule was the one that we built thinking that we'd have a green light in June. We got it in August. We're racing to try to get something underway before it gets too cold. But we'll... You'll see in a moment here, we have a lot of the wells completed, and we're working on piping now. Can you go to the next slide? So now I'm zooming in down on the south there where those two agricultural units are. The community east LTU is well underway. Each of the stars, trying to use larger, bolder symbols, each of the stars is a new well, extraction well that's actually in place. The red ones are the extraction wells that are going to feed higher concentrations to those pivots. And as Ms. Dernbach said, we're excited about getting these online because they're down in the core of the plume. We've also added an expansion of the IRZ system. These blue lines had been where we were treating before. We put a big kind of mass of wells in here to target a hot spot that exists right in here. So it's a good example of adaptive management that we're knee-deep in the construction of. And then one last slide. You can go to the last one. This is a graph of that the hotspot that Mr. Dias was asking about. That's right in here. This is the highest remaining concentration on the site. And I agree with Ms. Dernbach's characterization. It's been bouncing, if you will. It's been as low as, I think, 2,000, 4,000, and up to 7,000, back to 3,000. And we've done some diagnostics in here. We put in two new investigation wells. And much like the staff calls the rabbit ears, we call this the peanut. And what we found is that we see a strong correlation between where we've had cleanup and the type of injection wells that we installed. And so when what we found is that we installed a long-screened injection well. When you do that, you put ethanol in. The ethanol kind of goes where it wants to. When we pack her off and target the well, we can get the ethanol to go exactly where we want it to. So it's a newer design. This was one of the early, like, first generation wells. And now with a newer design, with that targeted packaging, we can get that ethanol to go right into this layer and not go over the peanut or under the peanut, as it were. And so we saw that this well didn't have treatment, but this one did. And so these new ones we're installing, all these stars are additional IRZ wells, both up here and at a little hot spot in a different layer down here, are all being designed with that improved design and better flexibility. So again, this is the adaptive management that we've talked to you a lot about, and we're looking forward to getting these underway. And we can take a shot at mass removed by the IRZs. It's an interesting exercise. We'll need to caveat it in a way, because they're the kind of calculations that you can fit three hydrogeologists down in a room and you'll get three different answers. There's a lot of errors inherent in them, but we're happy to take a shot. And I'll also add one of the other items that we track, in addition to the 1,000-ish pounds of chromium removed, the agricultural treatment over time has also taken out 100 tons, not pounds, big shifting into 100 tons of nitrate in the area, because it stands to reason the nitrate is in parts per million with an M, the chromium is in parts per billion with a B. There's 1,000 times as much, on a mass basis, 1,000 times as much nitrate that those ag units are also treating. So that's all I have for my update. Any
questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Webster.
So good evening, Ian Webster, IRP manager, here to represent the technical interests of the CAC and the community. I normally give a presentation on the dynamics of the interface between the technical work and how it's being received and how the community is understanding the work that's going on, and I'll continue that theme tonight and take you through a few thoughts that I've had, especially as we kind of look towards the future. I think the project is moving from a transition from treatment units are in place, the plume has been defined, a monitoring platform has been established around the plume. There's obviously a lot of dots and maps tonight to think about as to the right spacing of these things, etc. But as the job moves, we're moving into a condition where there'll be a cleanup and abatement order that PG&E will then comply with, and the job will sail off in the years ahead. So my few slides tonight, and there's probably about 10 or 12 of them, and I'll go through them pretty fast, a lot of photographs, I'm going to kind of take in a little bit of a thought process about where I think the remedy potentially could go in terms of a thinking and planning process. So the key word I've got in this cover slide is the word omnipresence. And if you click to the next slide, the definition of omnipresence means present in all places at all times. And what I mean by that is, when you come here to this Hinkley community and talk about the remedy, most people focus on, as we've done tonight, the plume shape. It's the peanut, the varying sizes, it's the rabbit ears, etc., however you want to describe it. But people think about the definition of this work is that shape on the map. But to the clients, I guess, that I represent in this project, they not only live with the shape of the plume in their mind beneath the surface, they also live with the manifestation of the cleanup events on the actual surface itself. It's not just the underground events that we're all talking about here tonight, it's how it's been impacted on the surface. So the omnipresence of this plume is a day-in, day-thing that I think is part of the psychology of the cleanup has to be considered as the cleanup is defined. So the flow of my remarks here tonight, next slide please, are as follows. I'm going to describe briefly the technical outreach that I've got the pleasure of conducting continues at a high rate. As we especially are telling my clients that we're driving towards this kind of omnibus last cleanup and abatement order, it's so important to get it right. And the community and the CAC are obviously very interested in being a stakeholder in how the words are written and the milestones, etc., within that document. It has been, as I say, it's challenging to maintain a focus, though, on the direction of the project, and I'll refer to some things in a minute. It wanders around like a snake, but my job is to try and keep a technical focus on the most important things. In my opinion, on the third bullet there, above ground topics, this is a broad statement, I'll say it twice, above ground topics dominate over below ground topics. And I'll talk about how I think events on the surface, where people live, people do not live 100 feet underground in the Chromium Plume, they live on terra firma on the surface, how these surface events are very important as we kind of craft the overall, as the water board considers what this final cleanup and abatement should be. And then I come to the most kind of general hypothetical thing. In my experience, what we've got here is a beautiful remedy that's working 80 feet underground, 100 feet underground, but it's also utilising such things as farming. PG&E has done extensive outreach, so this becomes the true definition of what could be a sustainable remedy, using many components to actually form an overall environmental solution. So let me try and go through some of these four bullets in quick succession. Next slide. So I continue to pound away on the technical building blocks of the project, and literally this is the building blocks of the project shown in the old gymnasium here. But if I click to the next slide, I think many of these building blocks that are shown here, if you click again, I think many of them actually have been discussed, vetted many times over, and I'll proclaim that to a high degree, and there's an accuracy here, to a high degree, there's a high degree of understanding of the technical topics of the project, such as where is the plume, hydraulic control, the use of the Northwest Freshwater Injection Barrier, the IRZ system, etc., how arsenic and manganese are generated. That's all these X'd out boxes in the bottom. The top box up there basically is the final remedy, the final frontier, and the next 6 months to 8 months in the project will cover that. So let's move to the next slide. So as the CAC has been following this in the community, the community does realise that the technical focus moving ahead is into forecasting where the pathway of this remedy is. Where is it going? What's its pace to closure? What's its speed and the effectiveness? This is a photograph from the last meeting we had here where Kevin did talk about the modelling work, and tonight we heard about other aspects of ingredients that will go into this cleanup and abatement order. And again, the key takeaway for the board, I think, is the community is vibrant enough to be a stakeholder in the crafting or this ultimate cleanup and abatement order. And we thank you for the open process we're having through the workshops. Next slide. So immediately after the last meeting, just to give you an idea, I know you gather here once every couple of months, so the community does meet once every month still. The last meeting we had a couple of weeks after you were here last, 50 people showed up, and we hit on the top five or six topics of the project. Next slide. And I continue to use a combination of technical work plus visuals, models, any possible tool that an engineer, a chemical engineer, can use to describe the topics of this particular project. Next slide. But the job's challenging. It wanders around, and I try and continually keep a focus on the big ship there, the final remedy. And I think the small, if you click all these small dinghies, if you click, they're floating around, such as the Plume's Western Finger, the Black Water, etc. While they're still there, the relative importance of these things, I think, in people's minds is declining as people focus on this final remedy. It's the grand vision ahead of what needs to be solved. So one of the topics that is in the dinghies floating around the main ship there, next slide, is, for example, the perception of this western pit. And it takes resources away from the project, I think, that could be directly focused on the grand scheme of this cleanup and abatement order. But we thank the Water Board and PG&E for debating the reasons that why that pit's there and possible releases from it. And now a very important slide, probably the most important slide in my overall lineup. So What I've come to appreciate, and this seems so simple when you see it in retrospect, but you got to go through this to appreciate this slide. So when I was first brought on board here as kind of the technical guy to sit between the community and interpret PG&E's work, my focus, my eyeball there, was focused on all these things in the bottom line. And I've worked really hard to try and explain these things. And it's all these items there are focused on that bottom equation, chrome 6 being reduced to chrome 3 that precipitates out. But as the eyeball hovers over all these things and you explain it week in, week out, day in, day out, some things start to evolve in your mind. Next slide, just click. There is progress and success, and the key words in the plume here are, while there's progress in underground at the 100-foot level, on the surface, click please, there is a perception sometimes that progress is not occurring on the softer issues of the project. So the hard technical issues are what the eyeball is focusing on underground. On the surface, the cleanup of the plume has manifested itself on various topics, such as you see here as declining population, homes being purchased, the school unfortunately being closed, etc. So I think that what we get to, that the board needs to kind of think through, is all the things in the bottom line combined with management of things in the top line constitute the definition of the modern sustainable remedy. There's a ball you can put around all this thing. Now, I fully understand Dr. Horn at the very beginning got up and said, here's what the water board can do. And the water board can do a lot of things on the bottom part of that slide. You can't do much in the top part. I give PG&E their due, absolutely. Many of the things in that top line, PG&E works very, very hard at. But I think it's time to start a debate overall where we combine the bottom line with the top line, and we try and see how much of that spirit can be embodied in this final Cleveland abatement order. Next slide. So one of the things that PG&E rightly said has thought about is people in the community have got different interests. And some follow your passion in terms of working on this overall Hinkley project as a community representative. So some members, for example, are interested in the trees. And the trees are one of the things in the top line of that diagram. Some folks are interested in keeping these trees alive because of them not been getting water, because of the homes in the area being removed from the overall portfolio. So these are examples of people having individual interests that need to be blended together in the Hinkley community as the project moves ahead. Now, this above ground, below ground topic, as the IRP manager, we investigated further in two venues. So you click on the next slide, please. At one of the community meetings, perhaps about 2 months ago, we decided to investigate this above ground, below ground topic by asking folks to come and put stickers on topics. And you can see the blue kind of board in the background there with the various topics on it. So people had three stickers, and they would come and put them on the map, basically voting where they thought they were most interested and engaged in the project. And the upper part of the diagram is above ground, the bottom part is below ground. The survey was not only in that there's different stakeholder groups within the Hinkley community. This was the group that attended the meetings in the school, but there's also another group, for example, that shows up at the community centre for dinner on the weekends over there. So if you click, we had a friend of the community, the CAC, basically managed the process there. And the stickers were again put on the map. This is a close-up version of that above-ground, below-ground thing. But if you take the data, and this is a very inaccurate chemical engineer's approach to surveying what's going on. So if you click on the next slide, you get kind of an idea of where people's interests are. Where is the community interested, and how has it evolved with respect to time? So the bottom line is below-ground technical topic, and the above graph is above-ground kind of softer issues. And what I was initially brought on board to manage and think about and communicate on were the things in the bottom line there, technical issues 100 feet underground. Either because my work has been done, completed, or I've communicated reasonably enough, or people have become totally disinterested in hearing me talk all the time about it, there's not much interest now, seemingly, in the things in the bottom line. People are now focused, naturally enough, and the omnipresence of the plume as the work goes on above ground. So this is a very interesting piece of data that I think, in terms of a sustainable remedy, needs to be thought about. I don't have all the answers here, but I want to just bring it to your general attention in this early session. So, as I think more about this data and how it applies to actually on the ground, to the site, a couple of miles to the west of us here, here's some further close-up slides. What PG&E's work is doing out there, especially as Kevin just talked about the ag treatment units, it's the perfect green sustainable remedy. It's a farming solution to a groundwater problem. Next slide, please. So, you know, the acreage will change from basically devoid of crops, features, and greenness on the left-hand side to the condition on the right-hand side, over 500 potential acres coming up. That's the greater hydraulic capacity that will be brought to clean up will create this green environment. Sustainable solution. Next slide. So the question I ask here, an important one as I close here, is there an opportunity to adjust our thinking to frame the concept of a sustainable remedy which will exist for decades, omnipresent, in the Hinckley community to the benefit of all stakeholders? And the definition of a sustainable remedy is listed on the left-hand side there. I think it's a very important feature that benefits all stakeholders in this project. Use all environmental effects to incorporate all possible options that are available to us into defining a grand remedy here. So I get two more slides. Carrying the sustainable remedy thought a little step further, click please. So here's the there's various definitions. You can go to the BTSC, you can go to the Water Board, you can go to EPA. I'm most familiar with US EPA, so I go to the EPA for the definition of a sustainable remedy. And there's three kind of columns or chunks to what is defined as an environmentally sustainable solution to an environmental project. And they're environmental, technical, the stuff underground, social and economic. As you said, Dr. Horn, at the beginning, you can work in that left-hand column. You can order PG&E to do things on the left-hand side there. These are technically orderable things under the cleanup and abatement order. As you move to the right of that diagram, things become a little softer, and it's where PG&E has worked really hard with this community over the past 5 or 6 years to basically launch out into the social and economic parts of the project. So if you click on the next slide, click on the next, the left-hand column, in terms of that component, that chunk, being added to a sustainable remedy, I think it's being done. 9 out of 10 in that left-hand column. What remains is the future debate for consideration by the board, PG&E, even the CAC, the community, and myself, if I remain in the project after my remarks tonight, is the two right-hand columns there. I think if you click and click, you'll come up with two question marks. There's factors there that I think all of us as stakeholders should consider as we move ahead. And I think we get months and months to do this, but I think it's an important remark to make tonight at this particular point as we discuss the transition between the remedy being set up and what this cleanup and abatement order will look like. Where is it going as it affects these two right-hand columns? So, in conclusion, truly in conclusion, my last slide is, can a common ground be discussed through a kind of a discussion process over the next 6 to 8 months between the stakeholders that have been mainly involved in this project? For PG&E, I think they're doing a pretty good job basically in these two right-hand columns. The left-hand column, 10 out of 10, engineering the solution perfectly. And the two right-hand columns, can they continue as a stakeholder and a good neighbour in Hinckley to basically put effort into these two columns on the right-hand side? For the Water Board, again, Dr. Horn, your authority is constrained by the work you can do in that left-hand column, but I think as an important stakeholder, you have got a role in these two right-hand columns. And for the community, it's an important one. I'll probably get tomatoes flung at me from behind, but they need to show a willingness to let the past go behind and look towards the future to the work that will be done under this grand cleanup and abatement order. So these are quasi-technical remarks, human psychology, omnipresence of plume remarks from a chemical engineer, and I offer them for your consideration, and I hope we can move ahead in the next 6 months to address some of the topics here. Thanks for your time.
Any questions for Dr. Webster?
No questions.
Comments?
I have a comment.
slide with the eyeballs, maybe it's because it's just been Halloween. Our house, we decorate with eyeballs. But so that maybe that's why I'm struck by that slide. But it seems so simple that it's hard to figure out why it wasn't noticeable to me in this way for a long time. And that is this connection between what goes on above ground and how people experience the consequences of whatever's going on below ground, which is not observable. And it's really tricky, I think, to make the connection, which is that arrow, which I think is an optimistic, but not a misplaced optimistic arrow, that goes from below ground to up ground and above ground and says, how is it going to be that the community can act out and benefit from what we think is a technical track below ground, which is going to produce acceptable results? And I think that's a really important question. And maybe it's a tribute to everybody for hanging in for this length of time that we found ourselves in a position that we can sort of tentatively ask ourselves that question. But I think it is a really important question to focus on and to try to flesh out. I think that what, as the Water Board, we need to create orders and a situation in which there's enough of a sense of stability on the right, on the left hand of your three columns that allows people to have the ability to go forward and explore the other two columns that are there. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that I'm not declaring victory by any means at all, and I'm not saying that we're out of the woods, and I'm not saying that we're done. But I'm saying that as we go forward and try to get a good, workable solution to the below-ground problems, that we have the courage to then sit down and talk together about how that's going to manifest itself above ground in the lives of the people who live here. Because the whole purpose of doing the below-ground part is really to make possible... Right. Better lives for the people in the community.
Thanks. Nothing to add to that.
Ms. Cox? Just a brief question. Is there fatigue in the community? I'm just sensing.
Oh, yeah.
They're done. They want this to be over. They want to get on with life.
I could talk for, as could many of the community members probably, even though they're fatigued, they could talk for hours about the issue. So it's kind of there's the omnipresence word. I mean, it's hard to the passion about the project that one feels when one goes to the weekly CACMEM meetings, but then also the monthly meetings that you still get 50, 60 people showing up at, the passion is still high. There is a sense, not shared by all, but there is a sense by many that it's time, the job is tipped. It's tipped towards that a solution has been defined. People can see that the IRZ, the red blobs that used to be 14,000 ppb are now a max of 6,000 or 7,000 ppb. They can see the plume shape shrinking. So, by simple metrics that you can create, they do see progress. And what the fatigue in those who remain is manifested in is that people did not expect 300 plus homes to be purchased, and then the people leaving. So there was an expectation. 2.5-3 years ago that the community would become more vibrant again through the whole house water program, but we never expected it to turn out the way it did, and that has left a legacy of fatigue for those who remain. I can't go.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a little, I mean, I appreciate your presentation. I'm just a little nervous about the final remedy picture, which I can't find at the moment. Because I believe that, I'm just worried that we freight too much weight on this next CAO, because we have talked about reviewing, having an adaptive management approach, reviewing this thing on maybe a four-year cycle that was proposed last
right.
time. And so I don't want people to think that there won't be opportunity for steering the course down the road, that we have to get it, you know, perfect this time around, because there will be opportunities for continual improvement.
Well said. When Laurie was making her remarks tonight, I didn't write anything down until you used the word contingency triggers. Mm-hmm. And that's another way of staying adaptive management,
yeah.
because you can't, you're trying to, like, in a design build basis, forecasting ahead, you can't see everything. The data is not perfect. It's looking into a fog. This is the fog of war, basically, a fog of Chrome 6 remediation war. But the cleanup and abatement order has got to be flexible enough that it can anticipate things happening. These triggers that allow PG&E to do workarounds when new data is collected that basically lead to situations. We didn't expect that, but the cleanup and abatement order gives them a pathway to try and fix it. You know, I know that Kevin's also worked on it. He talked about it last time. I think that what the community's looking for is, I mean, I talk in general terms, there's a great belief in Dr. Isbicki is going to ultimately arrive with the signposts to the promised land, which is the ultimate numbers by area, Chrome 6, A, B, C, in these different areas. But what I think all of us want is some kind of these interim targets, interim goals, that it's not just A to Z, here's the start, here's the finish. There is some kind of milestones around along the way. That would give everyone a crutch, you know, to target for. So I am actually very optimistic that a grand recipe, and the trouble is writing it down on paper, but a grand recipe can be created to get from the dots in the map we got right now through a flexible process to what Isbicki eventually defines 5 years from now. I really think it can be done.
And with that,
thanks a lot.
Our speaker, where's my speaker card? Darren Banks, what a surprise.
Sorry for taking up more time. Darren Banks, Hinkley resident. I'm going to agree with some of what he says, but I'm also going to say that, in my opinion, some of what he says is his opinion, not necessarily the opinion of the CAC.
Are you speaking for the CAC, or are you speaking for
Darren? I'm speaking for me.
Okay, thank you.
And so, through attrition, whether it's buyout or just, this has just been, it's not been a couple years, this has been going on for much of the community for 30 plus years, okay, since it was discovered, or since they, PG&E had to acknowledge the fact that they even did it, okay, so the people that have been there for that much time, there's a reason for the distrust and the anger, both in the water board and in PG&E, because the distrust wasn't built on perception. It was built on a lot of lies and a lot of throughout the years, I think that the community felt like they were told a lot of things and that basically weren't true. And so what you have through here is, yes, what Dr. Isbicki is saying is true, that we've gone over the IRZ. We've gone over what all this stuff does. We've gone over what PG&E does. But the majority of the community, majority meaning probably five or six people, have stuck with it and understand and grasp this part of it. Okay, not all people know or understand how it continues on. I mean, and PG&E uses things as a tool. The plume delineation thing, it's used as a tool for the corporation to do things. He talked about the buyout program and other things. I mean, all of these things and the distrust and lies come from the programs that you guys don't see the corporate side. You see the Kevin Sullivan side and the environmental side. You don't see the other side that the community does see and have to deal with the consequences of. And so through the years, people just want to leave. They want to wait. They want done. They don't want anything to do with it anymore. They don't want to deal with PG&E. And so if they get that opportunity, a lot of them have just gone. You know, I wouldn't want to live there either, you know, in that environment. And I think that if you all thought about it, you'd say the same answer. Why put yourself in a position where your home value is gone down to nothing, or your neighbors go away? And the reality of it is, there is people in the community that have had family members be sick and die because of the results of what PG&E's done, and that's proven by doctors. And if you need proof, I can get you the proof. So. When you talk about what's going on in the community, I think that we tend to get locked up right here what we're doing, and that's just a small portion of what has happened to our community. And so I think the most important thing to help the community move forward and move on is finding the truth and giving us a fair shake, being whether it's through an order or letters, being open. Which there's been times in the last year the water board hasn't been completely open, at least the enforcement team. So if we see all that and we see everything is open and we understand where Kevin Sullivan and PG&E is coming from, at least I do, as they come in. I don't remember one time sitting in all these meetings that I've ever done as Kevin came in and says, "Oh my God, this is our fault." Not one time. The only time he ever does is something where he has to acknowledge because you people or the board says, "Boom, this is your fault." He acknowledges that main plume. That's about it. Anything else, he takes his army and they go out, they come with solutions or alternatives that could suggest why it wouldn't be their fault. And then when we find out something, whether it's tritium or something else that says, "Oh, that shouldn't be there," then they back off and they go on to something else. So it's a game. It's a game that was played with the community. And so that's the part that you need to understand is if we get the truth at the end and you guys do your job and clean it up to where it was, where it should be, then the community will eventually be able to move forward. But if we don't have that absolute truth and that honesty, then probably the community will never move forward as it should. So, I mean, that's just my take on it. And I speak to a lot of people. I live there, so I talk to people a lot. So, that's all I have to say. Thanks.
With that, I think we're done for the evening. We'll regroup here at 8:30 tomorrow morning for the climate change workshop. Thank you for coming.